we shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory's won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more. We shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory's won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome.
During the month of February, and I give homage to the great Martin Luther King and someone I never knew about, Black Bear Extraordinaire, from his album named after the same. It's pretty amazing. I'll be playing snippets from it all through this podcast, and it's righteous, really. In this podcast, from Tinfro, Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy, I'll be talking about, of course, all nerd things, giving homage to Black excellence, talking about NASA with my eyes in the clouds, thinking about just how much we've overcome. Is it a difference? I honestly think so, because a short time ago, someone like me with the fro would have never thought to be able to entertain someone, or anyone for that matter, on my own platform. And that's how I'm going to overcome, and I'm going to celebrate this month as much as I can, doing what makes me happy, talking about the stars, talking about Star Trek. And I hope you enjoy it.
And we are going to show them why our anger's justified, and we will not quit. They're jealous of our beauty, though they will not admit. But we can pass down true strength and grit, so we can take on all the racists and the hypocrites. They spoke out so we can say what we gotta say. They pray for our future, so today we can pray. They paved the way, so we can pave another way. They fought another day, so we can fight another day.
New justice. Get boogie down on home ground.
That is Earth, Wind, and Fire, Les Roof tonight. It's crazy that I think my podcast has become a platform of great music as well as witty commentary. Or more like nerdy commentary. I'm not even gonna lie. However, in this segment or part of the podcast, I just talk about just nerd news. And it's not really nerd news. It's just what I've observed in NASA. In 1992, I had the opportunity to participate in International Space Year, as it were, as far as an internship that really looks good on your resume. I found it by accident, old school corkboard, and this particular advertisement was hidden underneath other stuff. I don't even remember the other things that I saw, but what I did see is the launch of one of the then shuttles. Little did I know, I was going to basically witness or be privy to two launches from the Kennedy Space Center and NASA at that time, as well as several landings because of hurricanes and some other things in California. The space program then was experiencing a contraction that I really recall now, and my participation in that program was little more than a fluke, and it was kind of a feeble attempt to bring you know, like notoriety or some fanfare back to the space program. I was just a nerdy kid from a very small college, and I think I was one of the few people that actually applied to the program. I don't think they did a really good job of pumping the space program up at the time. It was 1992. There was no space or no Facebook. There was no Instagram. So they were using word of mouth and little ripoff sheets to advertise something that was just so amazing. I remember the launch of the Hubble telescope itself. I remember people talking about it being such a big waste of time. But from what I'm seeing now from a civilian's seat is these recreations and some of the most wonderful contributions to science and inspirations to artists, what they're sending us back and what creators are able to create from some of the most amazing images I've ever seen in my life. And if you are a Star Trek fan or just a sci-fi fan, you will realize that some of the imagery, or a lot of the imagery that we enjoy in our games, in our videos, and some of the special effects that people from VFX utilize to entertain us is because of this, the images rendered by this telescope. In my post, I basically look at an artist's interpretation of young stars that are very similar to our Milky Way, but this is an artist's rendition of something outside of the Milky Way based on the interpretation of X-ray emissions and magnetic clouds. This is the data, the optical data from the Hubble Space Telescope that they've extrapolated from red, green, and blue. And the Spitzer Space Telescope is shown in red, and how they've actually put all of this information together to build what looks like the neutrons were observations. But I'm waiting to see something similar to this either in Star Trek Online, some of the new sci-fi, hopefully in PS5, but I doubt it, probably in Xbox One, or even in the new series Discovery or Picard. I think it's absolutely amazing, and I'm really looking forward to seeing this. That's the late, great Michael Jackson in before he turned to what he died as. This is Big Nose Michael Jackson, the great artist before the pedophile mug that we know of today. One of my favorite songs, Rock With You. And who knows? I don't know if Captain or Lieutenant Commander, probably Victor Glover, would agree with me, but he's a great artist. But this episode of Black Space Excellence, I'm giving big ups to Victor Glover, who is one of the black pilots, only black pilots, in the NASA program as we speak. But he also took, after 3,000 accumulated flight hours, more than 40 aircrafts, 400 carrier landings, and combat missions, he basically took his first spacewalk on January 28th of 2021. One of the first black astronaut with an extended stay on the International Spaces, International Space Station. If you have to give black big ups to anybody, as far as fandom and space nerddom, it is definitely big ups to Mr. Victor Glover. He made Demir, but we are very proud of him and his excellence in space and the furthering of scientific endeavor. Was being clever and marrying my rants and my little musings on the NASA program, marrying it with musical stylings. That is New Edition from their song N.E. Heartbreak, Where We All Started From. And get this, released in 1988. 1988, 33 years ago. Man, I'm old, but this song is kind of bumping. And I just realized that they were only kids, they were teenagers, and I was a teenager. Actually, I was exactly 17 years old when this music or this particular song or album released. I was so excited to get the tape. Yes, cassette tape, y'all. I didn't think, did I have a boombox at this time? I don't recall having a boombox. Or I had a Walkman, and I wore this particular song out. I ended up buying this again, Yes, I did have a boombox. I had a yellow boombox, and I think I tried to tape this when it was on the radio, and then I joined the Columbia Music, the music club, where you get like 50 tapes for a penny, and you end up paying like $100, and that's how I ended up getting this particular album. But neither here nor there, New Edition was absolutely amazing. I was 17, so I was in high school. But at any rate, I do remember them performing this because they did come to either the Coliseum or the Scope, and it was like my first, New Edition was my first concert that I went to. Because I think, yes, because Johnny Gill had already joined the group. He was on stage, and then old High Butt, Bobby Brown must have come and joined it. And that was the same night that my sister got in a major accident where she ran into the back of that lady car that was sitting under the overpass with her lights off because she was confused in her BMW or Mercedes. But that's a whole different story. But just suffice it to say, A1 all around New Edition fan. And it's apropos that the next Hubble's inspired illustration is of the star chart that is used pretty much ubiquitously in Star Trek, demonstrating the alpha and beta and then the delta quadrant. Because in the next part of the podcast, I will be talking at length about Star Trek Voyager, because that's all I've been binge watching since Thursday, is that particular spinoff of the original series Star Trek. They basically, on a true, actually demonstration of the Milky Way, you can basically see the different star systems where the Dominion and the Borg, as well as the Federation and Romulan Klingons, are basically overlapped on an actual artist rendition of our particular galaxy. It's pretty amazing. That is the main title from Star Trek Voyager by the great Jerry Goldsmith. And why wouldn't I start out this segment of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy Star Trek Corner with the theme of Star Trek Voyager, which I've been watching relentlessly for the past 3 or 4 days. So, I did not know several things. Number one, this particular segment of Star Trek started about 2 or 3 years after Deep Space Nine. There was a gap, evidently, between Star Trek Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, when Deep Space Nine, for a couple of seasons, was the only Star Trek spinoff that was on, I don't know if it was on UPN or whatever network that it was on. But then they created Star Trek Voyager, which was the end-all be-all of the after spinoff of Star Trek Next Generation. Granted, I am kind of curmudgeon-y, and I'm very hypersensitive in the wake of Corona and the social injustice between George Floyd's murder and Breonna Taylor's murder last year, and 2020 kind of sucked. But I'm very, very sensitive as an African-American professional to the slight of us because of who we are. But they couldn't give Avery Brooks, who played Benjamin Sisko, the lead character of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the same props as the white girl with the bun. What's her name? You know what? I should have known her name, but I don't really care because she's known more as the Russian on Orange is the New Black. But anyways, she was actually really good as Catherine Janeway, the captain, the anchor of this particular series. And as a deep Trekkie, I know some of the themes are problematic, but it's very redemptive. I don't think Lucille Ball thought when she basically was the executive producer, I believe, at Desilu Studios in the original Star Trek, if she actually cared, or even Gene Roddenberry, actually gave a damn that this series represents the society as it should be and the people that actually watch it. I don't think they would have thought that it is problematic that this white girl goes and tries to overlap the Zionist United Federation of Planets ideals on the Wild Wild Delta Quadrant. I don't think that they thought it was all that deep, but me and my a hyper racial tendency at this point in my life would think of this. I do love the special effects. I think I've made many comments on, as I've watched the third season of Star Trek Discovery and the fight scenes, I think it's honorable how they represent and the different races that and species that they represent across the spectrum. They take on the themes and what ails society, and they integrate it into a new and inventive way. Some die-hard Star Trek fans don't think there is a place for any of this in this entertainment realm, but I think it really is, because tricorders and a lot of the things that we take for granted in everyday life, from cell phones to scanners to 3D printing, all were birthed from the conceptualization were birthed from the Star Trek universe. So stop it. And sci-fi. So just stop it right there. Just because it, on a subliminal level, it doesn't represent what you think about white supremacy, it really kind of does. And I think that's with some of the themes that I've seen. I'm only on the second season, and I think some of the themes overall are very problematic. And I don't think people should say that this particular platform, why do you want to politicize it? Why do you want to make everything racial? But it really is, because the people that created the showrunners were all white. Why wouldn't they bring those biased themes into entertainment? I mean, look at the first thing. What was it called? Birth of a Nation, which Woodrow Wilson basically showed, and it was an homage to white supremacy. So why can't something like this basically series of Star Trek be like that? They seem to have tried, but it kind of went left. And it does have redemptive properties, because again, the main cast characters themselves does represent society at large, but I don't get why the main character had to be a white female. She was badass, don't get me wrong. They tried to make her feminized, but that bun just kind of pissed me off. And her hairstyle kept changing throughout the first and second season, and they basically settled on something that basically made sense. A basic blowout and flip towards like season 7, but it did take them over 7 seasons just to come and settle on her hairstyle. And maybe it was her, I don't know, but whatever. I'm okay. I had to be okay with that. Catherine Milligrew, I think that was the character's name, that played Catherine Janeway. Okay, it took me a minute, but it came to me. But evidently, she didn't get the lead because of a Canadian actor quit like 1.5 days into shooting of the first season. But I'm glad she quit, because I can't imagine anybody in that role. You know, as I said, a lot of the themes and some of the themes were actually problematic. However, before I even get to that, well, maybe I'll get to that later, but even though some of the themes themselves are absolutely problematic, with the alien species being brown and black people, and always threatening the lily white, white bread, Pollyanna tendencies of the Federation, I do have a problem with that, but at the same time, it does make for good, great TV. I think not only some of the technology based on the science that we gained from the NASA space program, overlap that, like stellar cartography, astrophysics, and between the Hubble spacecraft and Artemis, those types of things are their public domain, and they are allowed to be integrated until these multi-billion-dollar industries. But it does make great entertainment, and I also think it wouldn't, like this podcast, but also like Instagram posts from Ships of Star Trek and all of those beautiful, beautifully rendered artist renditions of the universe, Star Trek or beyond, or simply the Instagram posts. One of my most it's becoming more and more favorite. I do have Enterprise F, and I need to basically find this. Again, the only regret that I actually have when I left a former job is giving this particular model as a present to one of my colleagues, because I have not been able to replace it. I have like Defiant and a Corella model, but they're very small. That's the only one of the regrets, that I gave that away because I have not been able to replace it. But some of the pictures that I've actually been able to see on the Ships of Star Trek Instagram stream, for example, the Enterprise F engaging the Borg, the old 1701 in dry dock, and in a runabout actually docking with Deep Space Nine. Those are the type of things that actually make being able to incorporate the descriptions in to the podcast as well as into the podcast notes. I actually was able to get artist rendering of Voyager, and I gotta respell that. Y'all would think. Which is a Nova class spaceship. And all I keep adding to it's not really a rant, it's just as to how I perceive some of these episodes. Because, for example, I didn't, for whatever reason, I couldn't remember the pilot of Caretaker of Voyager. And I was like, because it was so unmemorable, or was it just that whacked? And it really wasn't. It was kind of hokey, though, when you think about it. It was like a 2-hour episode, and it was the Caretaker when they were on their way to Deep Space Nine, and then they got pulled into a wormhole and got thrust into the Delta Quadrant. This Caretaker that, and you got introduced to every single major character in this particular series right at the first 2 hours pilot. I don't think it diminished everything. It just made it, you basically from the beginning knew who was Major Boss. And I mean, come on, lady, a female captain, a black Vulcan, Tuvok, and Native American Chakotay, who was fine, basically the anchors of this particular series, trying to uphold the rules of the White Bread Federation where they didn't even exist. That's pretty baller. And it's also pretty white supremacist, also white privilege, that they would try to invoke the whole, it just beguiles me, because I do like this stuff, but it just beguiles me that you would try to evoke rules of an organization that doesn't even exist in this particular universe. That's baller. Nobody with white people would actually think of that. So good luck with all of that. But it's tried time and time again. And the Kazon and every other, and also the Kazon keeps screwing with them, because they were like with their with their very quintessential afros, I love these mugs, keeps challenging them and tries to basically strip them for parts, because they operate with their own sets of rules, and they try to overlap the white bread rules onto the Kazon, and they basically are not having it. I think it's hilarious. In the episode 20 of season 2, they really are not having it, where they basically, Neelix and old Tom Paris, try to basically infiltrate the Kazon to get back at them. And they basically suss out another spy that wants, who is ex-Maquis, want basically to do this alliance so they can somehow either stay in the Delta Quadrant linked up with the strongest, or they're going to get them at least a couple of 100,000 light years closer than 70,000 light years closer to going back home. I can see why, if you are Maquis, that you don't want to go back home, because you get ready to go back home to a prison. Because if anybody knows about that side story, the Maquis is a group of ragtag on the demilitarized zone that the Federation basically enters in. And this is kind of next generation, right before the Dominion Wars, that they give up territory to the Cardassians and they allow these colonists to be uprooted and relocated, but they started to fight back. That's against what the Federation rules and whatever treaties. And again, they go on the offensive, fighting against the Federation, and they get ex-officers. They did like a militia, like some of the paramilitary extreme militias that we actually have now. Their cause is noble, but it's completely illegal, and they basically committing treason. A lot of these ex-Maquis officers end up on, because of the caretaker incident, on Voyager. So they're having to mail all of these different ideals with of completely uncharted territory, and they gonna all make it work with the end goal of getting back to the Alpha Quadrant. But of course, it wouldn't have lasted for seven seasons if they basically gave up. So in this particular episode that I'm watching, I think this is right before the third season. They are, again, there's two Voyagers, because, again, they keep coming up with all these, not only are they making, they're encountering species that they've never been charted, but also scientific anomalies that they've never encountered. So this particular anomaly basically has photocopied two Voyagers. And as they the two Voyagers are completely unarmed when the Vidians, who are infected by this phage, because the only reason why I bring that up is because the Vidians have this phage that they basically harvest and genetically modify organs of other species so they can actually survive. This completely goes against First Contact and whatever, again, white bread, Starfleet Federation of Planet edicts. Neelix got caught up in this because they stole dude's lungs. But these, and also these fools are coming back because they see this as a particular, the Vidians see this as a particular possibility to go in and not only get two starships, but also to scavenge for skin and organs so their race can actually continue to survive. I can't make this stuff up because it's already been come to fruition as far as Star Trek universe. And that's why I think this particular series does such a good job. Although, as I said, some of their edicts or themes are problematic. It is stuff like this, how they go into each encounter, because it is completely new, but they take it, they adapt, and they go into it headlong, not knowing if what the end result is going to be. Is it bravery or stupidity? Who knows? So now I'm watching episode 22 of season 2, Innocence. And of course, it starts off where Tuvok is on an away mission and they crash on what they think is an uninhabited M-class planet. But however, the crewmate dies. Of course, he shatters his spine, but they roll up on three little kids. One of the little boys looks like one of the Maori or the Smollett little kids, but of course they're really sweet, and the whole premise of the theme is their species also was on a ship and crashed on this planet. All the adults are dead, and it leaves these three adorable kids to be taken care of by the most unlikely babysitter, the unfeeling Vulcan. I can't even. It's going to be adorable, I know. So the little boy is actually a Maori, even though his older sisters are annoying now. But watching a Vulcan manage three badass kids is probably the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. He basically separated them after they were running around. As soon as he told them not to touch anything and not to run around, that's exactly what they did. And then they argued over who was going to sit next to him. And they are just hysterical. This is probably one of the cutest, best written episodes of the series. These kids are just really cute. I think kids in general are just so disarming, and they have the strength that only adults can wish that they had, and the adaptability that adults wish they could have. Of course, a child shall lead them. This was amazing. It basically ended because this race of people turned their back on technology, and their life cycle is completely reversed. So they go, their end of life is when they become almost infantile and they basically disappear. And who better to lead them than a Vulcan? Okay, that was completely baller. I love this episode. It also leads me to the whole issue, because this is Tennessee Froe is reading. And I have been able to add several books, of course, to my own online bookstore, Chatterbooks. But also, as every single spinoff of the Star Trek verse has given us, there are several books, and Voyager is no exception. There are over 18, 19 different novels that have been associated with each episode, starting with Caretaker, when this crew is hurtled across space and they actually have to team up with what people would consider adversaries to basically survive and get back 70,000 light years back to the Alpha Quadrant. There's the escape where it's a continuation of the Caretaker series. I've added Incident at Arbuck. This is a particular system that's nearly deserted, and USS Voyager encounters a weapon that's more powerful than any starship. This basically dropped also in the 90s, so we'll see, because, of course, they're going to cobble together some type of defense, and, of course, they're going to reign victorious. And that's what one of the things that I do like about sci-fi. The good guys actually do win, so... And that particular story is no different. And then there's a in Violations, the next in the series, where there's a group of aliens that are perpetrating that they're going to help the crew find their way home, but they're basically just in it to steal the technology. I don't know if they're Kazon or whatever, but they're basically just in it to get the computer. And of course, they get it back. And then in Ragnarok, the Voyager sensors detect a signal that could potentially lead them on their way home. But then they find themselves right in the middle of some type of civil war. Then they're in the murdered sun. They detect a wormhole nearby to find, and it has a potential for them to have a shortcut back home. But of course, the war in Arcareans are basically going to thwart that ability for them to basically utilize that as a means to get back. I skip ahead to the part of the series because I think Seven of Nine, she doesn't, her character, the Borg character, does not get introduced into the series, I think until like the end of season 3 or season 4, but she actually, they basically, it's not a rescue, she's the only surviving member of the collective, a crashed Borg scout ship, and they basically rescue, well, technically they do rescue her, they remove her cyber genetic implants, and then they integrate her into the crew. Of course, if you follow the series, Harry Kim, and I think, does Tom make a run for her, or Chakotay, they make a run at her, but of course she repels all of them. She also comes back in the Picard spinoff, and she basically, I guess you can be Borg and also non-binary or bisexual, because she ends up hooking up with the token black girl in the Picard series. So you got to actually watch Picard to find out what the ham sandwich I'm talking about. So there you go. I'm going to end this episode. This has actually been one of those that I could go on and on and on, but I decide not to. I have the opportunity to listen to great music. You hear in the background me playing Non-Binary by Black Bear Extraordinaire, as well as the ending to this great episode where I basically hopefully mix music, contemporary music, with what I'm talking about as far as space nerddom, and as well as Star Trek. And I left off me playing video games because I really wasn't at all into this week, and I find that I'm more creative when I'm not distracted by video games. But don't get me wrong, I am going to play video games tomorrow. I'm just saying. More into Solitaire Harvest than anything. Gosh darn it, Dr. Phil. But anyways, I'm going to continue to watch Star Trek Voyager, continue to think of everything that is going to be creative. I'm going to be posting from the Gulf of Mexico again as I take time off and head down to the Mississippi side of the Gulf Coast. I've never gone there before, so I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to making more inroads on my next creative venture as far as bookdom. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. And again, there are certain people that always need a bag of gum and penises, so don't hesitate to navigate to shipabagofdicks.com and use my promo code 10FroGotJokes to get a percentage off of your order. And as I was speaking about previously, all of the books that I have added or I talked about on this particular episode are actually available at alibris.com, and you can use my promo code. Actually, because the Black History Month promo codes are still valid, but they're also, you can get up to $10 off if you use either LONG promo code, Winding promo code, or Road promo code to get a percentage up to $10 off of your order up to $110. And don't forget to navigate to my online bookstore. The link is actually in the full podcast notes. And to get a great deals on all of written words, not only just Star Trek, but also some of the swag from Michelle Obama, as well as Battlestar Galactica. And as always, this is Tenfro. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And thank you for listening.
I can be whoever I want to. I don't care about your guilt. I am